You are listening to Exit Planning, What Advisors Need to Know.
Welcome to today's podcast for business advisors. My name is John Brown, and with me today is Jim Carlisle, a partner and attorney with Dinsmore and Scholl. It's a large law firm. They've got 21 offices in the Midwest. Jim's in charge of their exit planning-based practice. So I'll ask Jim to explain what he does, and we'll dive into his role and his core specialty, which now has really become exit planning. Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, John.
If you would start, just describe your law firm in more detail and how you got involved, perhaps, in the whole exit planning process.
Sure. I'm a merger and acquisition lawyer and general corporate lawyer, and as you just mentioned, I'm spending more and more time on growth and exit planning initiatives with my clients. I'm the national chair of our firm's growth and exit planning group, and Dinsmore is a full-service law firm with approximately 650 lawyers in 21 offices, and we routinely represent government entities, leading businesses, individuals, and corporate finance, intellectual property, labor and employment, and in all matters of litigation. So it's a world-class firm, and the reason that I'm so excited to be with Dinsmore is when needs come up for my clients outside of my expertise, I can access world-class experts that can step in with me to serve my clients' needs. So it's been a real good fit with me at Dinsmore.
So does that mean when you engage a business owner in exit planning that you're able to bring in your partners and associates in the actual legal work that's involved in exiting a business?
Yes. So I start out the exit planning engagement by learning about the client's objectives and learning about what they want and what they need. And then I do due diligence on the client, so I collect all of their documents per a buyer's due diligence checklist that I use when I represent buyers so that I make sure that I get all the right information. I create a virtual data room that I share with all the professionals that come forward, and some of those collaborators are Dinsmore lawyers in other areas that can add value to the mix. And we collaborate on solutions, and then we follow the BEI process in moving forward to engineer those solutions through to the exit.
So what in that's great. So what interested you in exit planning? And how did you get started in it once you decided that's something you wanted to do?
Well, this goes back for me. I've been involved with BEI for over 10 years, and I went through the certification process, which I found to be invaluable because I wanted to move into exit planning. But I wanted to be as good at it as I was at my primary function at the law firm at that time. And I liked the regiment of having curriculum that I could study. I went to the boot camp. I went to the annual conference. I absorbed everything I could through BEI, and it gave me a really strong platform to launch into exit planning. But what led me to be interested in exit planning, I didn't want to be an order taker to my clients. I didn't want to be reactive with respect to my clients. I wanted to be proactive. I wanted to be able to reach out, plan with them, and do their most important work. And what I saw as a lawyer was I was good at what I did as a merger and acquisition lawyer, and I was busy all the time. And a client would call me, and they would say, I received interest at a trade show, and somebody in the aisle over wants to buy my business, and I want you to do the documents fast, and let's get this deal closed. And I'd sit back and scratch my head and say, is that the best buyer? Are those the best terms? Or is the client just getting something done? And do I want to be a part of just getting something done? And I wasn't satisfied with that. And exit planning has helped me have a more positive impact for my clients by helping them find the best buyer, whether it's within their own company or external, and find the best terms, and also reduce the anxiety in their lives as they own their businesses, because they know they have a plan and they only just have to trigger it to get it started.
And Jim, you and I were talking earlier about that very point, which I really found fascinating, which is, you know, owners should begin their exit planning and actually create an exit plan, even though they may not have an actual departure date in mind because of the, I guess, the psychological or emotional benefits of that. Would you explain that or go over that?
Yeah, I believe very strongly in that because I think that clients, whether they articulate it or they don't, they're anxious. They don't know what the end looks like. And this business is probably their most valuable asset, and they don't know if they'll be able to sell it when the time comes. First of all, they don't know when that time is. They don't know what the market conditions will be like at that time. And so they're just living in a state of buried anxiety about it. And if they come up with a plan, and if all the detail is in place, first of all, a lot of the exit planning concepts that you move forward with, they just increase the value of the business anyways. So they're going to get the byproduct of improving the value of their business. But moreover, they'll have a plan that only needs triggered to move forward with it. So if it's a business continuity situation that they die or they become disabled, the plan kicks in. Or if they just have a change of circumstances that they decide to activate it, they're going to be able to do that whenever they care to. And I believe that when they have that plan, they have a reduced stress level and they enjoy their life from that point forward in a much improved way.
I just think that's really, really a nice insight. Let me turn to this. How do you begin the representation process? Let's say an owner's come to you, they're interested in doing something about their business. Maybe it's a sale, maybe they're just thinking about leaving at some point. What does that planning process look like from your perspective as an exit planner? What do you do first? What questions do you ask? How does that proceed?
So I go through a very detailed discovery process where I ask the business owner a lot of questions about the business, about themselves, about their objectives, and about their needs. And I really try to get to understand what they're trying to accomplish and what they need to accomplish. And I challenge it and I dig into it. But in the end, their objectives are what guides the plan. And as long as I know that they've thought them through, I take my marching orders from them, but I want to make sure they've really thought them through. And after I complete – oh, go ahead, John.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, after I complete that discovery process, then I create I give them a due diligence checklist where I receive all the applicable documents, and I set up a virtual data room with all the documents. So then I form a multidisciplinary team. So I ask them, who would you like to be on the team? And they tell me. And then I dig into it a little bit, because if they've outgrown an advisor or if an advisor is not sophisticated enough to contribute, I'll challenge it and I'll try to get an appropriate advisor added to the mix. And once we agree on a multidisciplinary team, I give that team access to the virtual data room. And at that point, the client doesn't have to go through the hard work of sharing information with many, many parties. I'm doing that for them. So they get access to the virtual data room, and then we have a meeting where I will call all of the advisors together, and I like to do it in person, and it's usually half a day to a day, and I've had a few occasions where it's been multiple days, where we meet and discuss the owner's objectives and how we can come up with recommendations to help them achieve it. And I think the solutions that come out of these meetings are magical solutions, in that you have the right people that were handpicked. The right people did the hard work of studying the documents. They come to a meeting, and you have a real-time collaboration that just does not happen in this world these days. The lawyer's not talking to the accountant, who's not talking to the financial advisor or the insurance advisor or to the advertising branding firm, et cetera. They're not talking. So usually any recommendation comes back to the owner, and they have to communicate it to the other advisor. Well, when you have this real-time discussion of ideas, you get a good idea that gets refined, and it becomes a great idea. And that list of ideas, usually by the time it's time to communicate it to the owner, I'm very excited to communicate it, because they are very powerful ideas.
Now, do you prepare some draft recommendations, some topics to consider, so that this group is focused, somewhat focused on the areas they're going to discuss as a group?
I only do that in my area. So when I am meeting with the owner or owners and interviewing them, and then I meet and interview key employees, then I get all the due diligence and I review it myself. As I'm doing that, I'm making a list of my ideas and I'm adding content to them and I'm defining them a bit and detailing them a bit. And when I go into the meeting, I've got my own ideas. I might say, we're going to take turns. We're going to go around the room. And I've got five things I'd like the group to consider that I have to offer. And I expect and want people to challenge them. And sometimes we discard my ideas and sometimes we refine them. But I assemble my own ideas in that way. But I then expect each one of these people to do the hard work to come up with their own ideas. And I tell them up front, look, I don't have a go-to in any of these areas. With the client, I always want the flexibility of going to the best possible person to invite to the team. So I need you to come forward and do your best. And if you don't do your best, if we have a black hole in one of the professional areas, obviously I'm not going to be able to invite you back for another one. So people get it. If they like to be involved and if they want to be involved, they're going to do the hard work to come up with their own really good ideas.
So, Jim, I have two follow-up questions to that. I bet this is all really interesting to me. The first is, does this process you're describing, the group meeting and so on, will this work with smaller businesses? I mean, we could assume because you're with a large law firm, you're dealing with businesses worth $50 to $100 million. Will this process also work for businesses that are worth millions, not tens of millions of dollars, or maybe even less?
It does, John, and the reason is, and this is interesting, some people object to this, and if they object to this, that just means they're not the right partner to come in to collaborate. The parties that come to the advisory team meeting, they don't charge for that time. So what I tell them is, I'm going to do the hard work of collecting the documents and sharing them with you. You have to go review them, research, and think about your solutions, and then come back with the best solutions, and you're not going to be able to charge anybody for those for that time. And the reason is you're in essence given the opportunity to have a request for proposal. So I'm doing the hard work for you so that you can study and have the very best outcome, but you're investing to make a proposal. And when you make it, you don't have to be a salesman any longer. So let's take a life insurance person, for example. If they go to the client and they promote an expensive life insurance policy, the client, you know, tilts their head and wonders because they know the advisor is going to make a lot of money there. Well, if it makes its way through our process, the team endorses the idea. No idea finds its way through unless the whole team supports it. So there's a very powerful impact that comes from having the group's recommendation coming out through the process. So if somebody's willing to invest the time to study the documents, come to the meeting, write up their solution and have it be part of the plan, then they're in the game. If they're not willing to invest that time, then we got the wrong partner. They don't see that. And I always tell these people, I will show you how fair I think that is, because if you develop an opportunity and you would like me to contribute in that way, I will do that every single day of the week because it will lead to a lot of activity. Because I know under those circumstances, I'll come up with a lot of good ideas that the client will want to hire me for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you say you give them access to the documents, I'm also assuming, and I shouldn't, but I'm assuming since you've already met with the client, you understand what their goals and objectives and aspirations are, maybe their time frame as part of that, you're also providing the team with all of that information. So if I'm the CPA as part of the team, I know when my client wants to, or this owner wants to leave the business. I know how much money he or she might want to have. I know who they want to transfer the business to, because that makes a huge difference. If they're going to transfer to their kids, my approach is very different than if they're going to transfer to a third party. So it seems like this advisory team needs to have all of the discovery information that you've already gone through, the the basic information about the owner's goals and the resources available to the owners. Is that something that you do?
It is. So I don't only share the virtual data room. I share a write-up summary of the owner's objectives and their financial needs and what I've learned about their interest and objectives. So that is a part of it, because I want the recommendations that each advisor prepares to bring to be consistent with the objectives as I've learned them through my interview.
Right. I think that's a very critical part of the exit planning process that our hundreds and hundreds of members use every day dealing with business owners, is knowing what the owner wants and knowing what the owner has, and having a good understanding of what the gap is, if any, between the resources they're going to need to achieve their goals when they leave and the resources they have today. And a lot of the planning, this group planning, is about closing that gap. This is kind of an observation, but I'd like you to comment on. One thing we find when we're talking about exit planning to advisors about the benefits of exit planning is that a lot of advisors, some advisors say, hey, I already do exit planning. I don't need to join an organization and learn more. I already do exit planning. And I'd like to contrast that position that one professional has with the resources and the talent you are bringing to that same owner. You have an entire team of top-level, well-informed, multidisciplinary advisors, and to me this contrast is tremendous. And the question is, if you're a business owner, who would you want? Which of those two alternatives would you want for you and your family concerning the biggest financial transaction and maybe emotional transaction of your life? So, more of an observation, but if you wanted to comment on that, that'd be great.
Yes, so I'll give you a good example of when this came to light for me recently. So I had a very good meeting with a very good potential client related to exit planning. And we went through a detailed explanation of our process. They came into our firm and they met the different people on my team that are trained to handle different functions of the exit planning process, and we walk through how we do all that we do consistent with the BEI model. And the client, it was a couple weeks, and this would have been a very substantial engagement because it's a very big company and it had a very complex situation related to it. So a few weeks later, the potential client called me back and said, you know what, I have good news for me, but probably bad news for you. I found out that our historical corporate lawyer at a very large firm does exit planning as well. So we won't need to make a switch. They already know all about our business, so they're going to be able to handle this. So I said, that's just great. I said, so what I'd like you to do is, you heard from us about our process. You met our people. You heard about all the steps. So what I'd like you to do before you make a final decision is go to the firm and have them present what their process is, have them present their steps, have them give you examples, and meet their people that handle each sub-function. And then after you're done with that, I'd like you to make an informed decision. Well, you know, I'm telling the story because it ended up with an engagement where they came back to us and engaged us, because what they found was these lawyers were able to speak on the various subpoints, but they didn't have a process, they didn't have trained people, they didn't have a way to see it through, and they would have been reactive. There would have been some initial time period of activity, and then it would have reverted to the way that most professionals work with clients, which is to be reactive. And so they engaged with us, and what I said to the client, you know, after they did, I said, I think it's good for you and good for me and them, because the good news for them would have been that they got the project if they did, but the bad news would have been that they got the project, because they would have been bombarded with the boxes of things you've given me, and without having the right people and the right process, they wouldn't have had a chance to get this done, and it would have been very frustrating for them and for you. So I go back to the benefit of the BEI process is there's a way to approach these complex projects, and there's a methodology. And if you follow it, it doesn't matter if the company's worth $1 million or $100 million. You can work your way through it and efficiently handle it with discipline. And people that haven't been trained and don't have dedicated staff and don't approach it in that way will not have a chance if the clients become fully informed.
Right. And I think the results really speak for themselves. When you are a professional, you're only going to be well-versed in your profession. Hopefully you're going to be well-versed in your profession. And exit planning, as you've already described, it can include half a dozen or a dozen different professions at some point in this exit planning process and implementation period. And we have a set of tools and a process that allows the exit planning advisor to facilitate and coordinate the efforts of all of these top-level advisors in what I believe is a very time-efficient and effective manner. And a single professional, I don't care what the profession is, simply can't do that.
And it's not only you have tools and processes, but you also have a team. And the team is the back-end part of the infrastructure. So all the time I follow the processes, I use the tools, and I still might get stuck from time to time, and I can call up any one of the BEI staff and ask questions and discuss things and get thoughts that help me break the logjam. These people that aren't affiliated with an organization like BEI, where are they going?
Yeah, that's a good question. They can only rely on their experience, which is limited compared to the experiences of hundreds and hundreds of advisors who are doing this every day. Jim, ordinarily I'd ask you to go through a story or two of clients you've represented successfully, but can you talk to us about, it may not even have been a client, just an owner that wasn't able to exit successfully?
Yes, I had it was an unfortunate situation where the spouse of a business owner was referred to me, and she came in to meet, and I had not heard that her husband had died, and he died in his mid-40s in a tragedy. And he had a very successful engineering firm, about 80 employees, and his name was part of the company. And I knew of this company. I didn't know what had happened, but I knew of the company, and I knew that they were very active and very successful. And she came in and told me what she told me, and she was clearly distraught. It had been a couple weeks since he had passed away. And she said, "I was referred to you and I need your help." She said, "I need to negotiate my way out of the lease with the landlord. I need to terminate this list of employees, and I need to figure out a way to sell some equipment." And she said, "If you can help me to do that, I would really appreciate it." And I said, "Let me ask you some questions." And when I dug into it, the family had inadequate life insurance. People in their mid-40s don't expect to die. The family did not prepare for educational expenses for two young children. And she didn't have a financial solution to any of this. But what she knew was she was being overcome by grief, and she had to deal with these things. And she, when she described the business, she said it was like sand falling through her fingers. She went in to meet and she talked to employees, and the employees would say, "Oh, we understand and we're in support," but yet they were leaving. And in the market that they were in, once some of them started leaving, it was a race to see who would get to the best jobs next. So employees started leaving at a more rapid pace. And employees, the same sand through the fingers. The client said, "We understand, we're with you." But as they watched their client service teams evaporate, they started to say, "We need to get these projects done. We're sorry, but we need to get alternative resources." So she said, "Where are we? I mean, what can I do? I'm losing employees and clients." So, you know, we ended up figuring out a way to get stay bonuses in place, and we found a company to buy them. But in the end, the company sold about a month later, and it only sold for about half of what it would have sold for if the fella had not passed. And we saw that as a success because she was left with thinking of liquidation value of equipment. That's what a very successful business can be worth without planning. So that was a very tough case to address because of the outcome. It wasn't as favorable as I would have liked, but it was the best we could do.
Yeah, and that's the outcome. It's the same outcome when an owner doesn't die, but they don't do any planning, and suddenly they're 63 years old and they want to leave the business in 6 months. They're not any more able to do it than this widow because they're mentally gone. They don't have time to prepare the business for the type of value they need from it in order to exit on their terms. It's the classic problem of not beginning planning early enough in advance of an exit. And it really goes back to one of the very first points you made, Jim, that I really think is a great point, which is business owners, if you have a successful business now or one that's becoming successful, now is the time to do an exit plan because you don't know when your exit might occur. It might be a sudden death. It may be a sudden offer to buy your business from somebody who thinks your business is better prepared than it is, perhaps. So exit planning is really something we should think of for really all of our business owners. One last final question or area to discuss, and that is the whole idea of marketing your exit planning practice area. What do you do to market to business owners and engage business owners in an exit planning process?
Well, one of the greatest resources that's available to all of us involved with the BEI network are the BEI newsletters. So what I find is I never try to get a client to engage in exit planning before they're ready. So I'll explain it, and if they're just not mentally there, I'll put them on the newsletter list. And what I have found over the years is that these potential clients get the newsletters, they read the newsletters, and they think about me even though I'm not thinking about them. And so because you get busy, you move on. But as opposed to having an encounter and losing it or going and giving I've also had talks with, you know, hundreds of attendees. And after the conference, I think, wow, I only have four new clients out of that. What's happening to the other 196? Well, I don't have to lose the thread to them. I can add them to the newsletter subscription base. They will get the newsletter. And then when they're ready, some external event may trigger them to reprioritize this. They're thinking of me because they get content from me. They see my picture every month. They think they know me. And it helps me to keep alive prospective clients without having to exert a lot of effort to do that every single month.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And that really was one of the very first tools we created when we started BEI as a membership-based organization. And that was to create a newsletter that's branded by the member, not by BEI, so that you can simply maintain that presence over time. Because you never know, or at least I never knew when I practiced law, when a business owner would suddenly decide it was now time to start planning or to think seriously about leaving their business. And unless you're in front of them at that point somehow, you're not going to get that client. And with a newsletter that comes out twice a month or whatever frequency you want, you're going to be in front of that client. So that's great. Jim, anything else, any other suggestions or information you'd like to share to the business advisors listening to this podcast?
Well, I'll just wrap up, John. I really appreciate the opportunity. I love exit planning. It's the most impactful, exciting, interesting thing that I think that I could be doing, and I enjoy doing it every single day. I look forward to getting to work every day, as cheesy as that sounds, to approach these projects because I know that the work that I'm doing and the impact that I have with my clients is changing families' lives and outcomes and letting people retire and letting them achieve their dreams. And so I am very appreciative to have found this niche to approach, and I'm very appreciative to have connected with BEI to give me the tools, because when I first started into this, I would not have made this my primary fundamental pursuit if it were not for the tools that gave me the confidence to wrap my practice into this. So very happy to be involved with exit planning and with BEI.
I appreciate that so much, and it's great to have you as a member, and it's great to have members like Jim because they share the knowledge they have with their other members, and it goes both ways. So that's really what I think improves the information and our tools and our resources more than anything else, which is members collaborating with other members, including being on podcasts such as this. So, Jim Carlisle, thanks much.
Thank you very much, John.
Thanks for listening to this week's Exit Planning, What Advisors Need to Know. Join us next week for another real-life case where John and his guest will help you understand how to make sure your clients exit their business when they want, for the money they need, to the person they choose. This and other exit planning tales can be found at exitplanning.com. Exit Planning, What Advisors Need to Know, is sponsored by BEI. BEI has helped business advisors create and deliver thousands of planning solutions to business owners across all industries, geographic regions, and business sizes. We don't plan for you. We make your ideas and efforts more efficient and more valuable to your business owner clients.